C1M, number 11B.
Says, well, that has a blessing effect, an effect which is good and fine. Namely, the human mind will at length demand a higher affection. See, it says at length. When the human mind, through these discomfort, through the powerlessness of vows, through unhappy homes and relationships, begins to realize that we cannot ask the human to be divine. That's the false calculation which we make, that we think a human vow can be as strong and as good as a divine vow. Because we make that mistake, one day we must see that this is a mistake. And so once we've seen the powerlessness of the human, then the human is made ready to capitulate and say, all right, then I must have something else. Then I must have a compensation in something which is fixed, which is eternal, which is indestructible. And so it reaches out, as it is said here, for a higher affection. So you see, the first subject at all was the demand for felicity to a human vow. And it was building on that first subject, and building up on it, says, well, that's something good. It is something good on the civil and on the moral plane. But finally we will find out, though it is good in the human, it will be insufficient. One day, somehow, love will work and work and work to make us realize that we must spend our goal higher and higher and reach out for a higher affection. This higher affection is then shown in the next tone of love of spirit as reaching out for a spiritual adherence. So it comes to the next tone of love as spirit, where we see that in this development, where the human gets dissatisfied and disillusioned, and where it awakes to look out for something higher, that in this struggle, in this transitional state, in this development, chemicalization and fermentations must be met through what? Through a more spiritual adherence. See, this transitional stage, she says, in this transitional stage where we begin to realize the powerlessness of human vows, of the human in general, and in that stage where we realize that powerlessness of the human and the necessity for demanding for something higher, in that transitional stage, something may chemicalize in us. It's the struggle that goes on. One thing wants to go back and say, why shouldn't the human vow be permanent and reliable and so on? And on the other hand is love's hand there who says, come to me, come to my bosom, draw near to me, there you are safe. In this transitional period, there is a fermentation and chemicalization taking place. Those next two paragraphs are all full about this fermentation and chemicalization. She says, there will ensue a fermentation over this reform. The fermentation, she says, is not pleasant. So we don't have to be worried about an unpleasant situation. We have to look behind this unpleasant situation. And looking right behind it, we see it's a pleasant situation because it's love at work, trying to give us the crown of being. It is, she says, an unsettled transitional state which is never desirable on its own account. On its own account, it's never desirable, but on the account of what it leads to, it is very desirable, because it leads us higher. Matrimony must lose its present slippery footing, and the mental chemicalization will throw off the evil. You see, she shows that through this chemicalization, through this struggle of the heart, where the heart tries to tear itself away from reliance on the human and tries to reach out and reliance on the spiritual, that in this period, this chemicalization will be helped by love as spirit. Namely, love is always that which says, I purify. I draw you to me, and in order to draw you to me, I must purify you first. Because nothing of evil can enter the realm of love. So we get a wonderful sense of purification taking place in this transitional state. She brings it out in various ways by saying, we will get at least the clearest training of truth, at least. You see, she says, we'll get at last the clear straining of truth. See, it's a developing period in which there is a purification taking place, and at last we get the clear straining of truth. Impurity and error are left then among the leaves. And in this period of chemicalization, fermentation, it will throw off evil, and marriage will become purer when the scum is gone. So, finally, she says, matrimony, which was once a fixed fact among us, must lose its present slippery footing. And instead of that, as a compensation of that, and men must find permanence and peace, not in a better matrimony, see, but in a more spiritual adherence. So this second subject we see again, you see, it is love that draws men to herself. And in order to be able to draw men to herself as spirit, it must purify the intentions of men. It purifies here the intentions of men to say, now don't struggle anymore with the human. Let it go. Adhere to the spiritual union, to a more spiritual adherence, to that bonds which are spiritual. And love says, and as you do that, I will support the struggling heart, and I will help you until the scum is gone. And then she comes to the third, which is a most beautiful exposition of love as soul. It's quite a long passage. It goes from page 66, line 1, over to page 67, line 17. You see, it's quite a long one. But as you read it, you will hear that it is always the same tone and a very important and a very crucial point. And I think because it's such a crucial point, she gave to it so many paragraphs. And I can't read all the passages and so on, but I just and I think you know those paragraphs from the reading of the textbook, so I can just make some remarks about it. What she shows here is, again, you see, that sense that love is always drawing men to herself. And as soul, love is drawing men through herself by awakening in men the sense of the perseverance of soul, which says, stick it out. See, we had that sense of soul already in Atonement and Eucharist, which says, be perseverant, don't go back. Here we have a higher sense of that perseverance, so that we can see here what he wants to say, that if we abide in the spiritual, we must abide in the spiritual patiently, patiently awaiting the issue, not to do anything precipitately, but to wait patiently, work and watch and pray and hope until soul itself gives the clear decision, the decision of soul. And then she says, then you can be sure of the blessing. Here she couples, you see, that sense of perseverance in soul with the security of the demonstration of soul. I wonder how I can put that really. Well, so often she speaks about this waiting. I must just the same try to find my notes. Yes. You see, those necessary qualities of adhere. We said love is that wedding of adhering to the spiritual, you see. And as soul, it says, all right, adhere to the spiritual in your soul sense, namely persistently, perseveringly, patiently, hopefully, and await and stick to it and stick to it and wait and work and watch and wait and work and watch until soul itself gives the decision. So that either through an irresistible propulsion the doom is precipitated, the doom of error is precipitated, or sunshine gladdens the heart. It shows that we should not act precipitately in a human way, that we should trust the soul, that soul has the ability, the faculty, the power to work out a decision which is always blessing. And we need that so often. So we have that sense here, that rule of safety which says that we must hope and pray and wait patiently on divine wisdom to point out the path, to await the logic of event. A side note is patience in wisdom. You see, it really shows that it handles that in us which says, I must make the decision. I must make a definite decision. Here it handles that and says, well, if you make a definite decision, it's a human decision. But working out a real blessing says, let love draw that which is good in me to herself. And in order that she can draw that to herself and put away all the scum, I must trust love to do the work. And in trusting love to do the work, I just must go on waiting, working, watching, praying, hoping, until wisdom points out the way. That all needs naturally a very tough inward attitude. It's like that the seaman of which he speaks, that he is firm at the post of duty. It isn't a weakness to wait and to wait and to work and to hope and to be patient. That is not weakness. That is real strength. That is real strength when one can put aside every material evidence and the evidence of the senses and the evidence of what human intelligence would like us to do, and put that all aside and say, no, thy will be done. And to persevere in that attitude. She speaks also to work on and await the issue. She speaks again about hoping and working, one should stick to the wreck until wisdom shows the way. See? So, in this issue, in this subject, we really find the rule of how to work out a crucial situation. And it shows at the beginning of this subtone of soul, shows that every crucial situation, doesn't matter how ugly it looks, has always a precious jewel in its head. She begins there with sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, bears yet a precious jewel in his hand. And then she goes on and shows that we are so mistaken to think that trials and sorrow and tribulations are something bad. Here she shows, no, we only misinterpret that because we don't know anything about love's working. There is only one thing always at work, and that is love drawing us to our bosom. And if we would remember that, then that which to human sense seems to be trial, sorrow, and tribulation would get quite a different taste. Namely, that taste which is loving and blessing. Therefore, she translates all these so-called trials into something positive. She says that sorrow is salutary. It's not derogatory, it's salutary. She says, through great tribulation, we don't enter through great tribulation hell, but we enter the kingdom. Well, we like things which are salutary. We like happenings which bring us into the kingdom. But at this period in the human, in transitional stage, they may show themselves in the picture of trials, sorrow, great tribulation. And it's only our foolishness which mistakes them and doesn't see that there are not two entities in the reality of being, heaven and hell, but only one, and therefore it can always be a blessing. Therefore, she also says, amidst gratitude for conjugal felicity, it is well to remember how fleeting are human joys. See, she even shakes at that which we most appreciate in our life, conjugal felicity, and says, be on the watch. See, John Dolly has often said, well, if everything goes wonderfully, then be on the watch. That's the dangerous time. Whereas in times of difficulty, we usually work better. We usually work harder, more earnestly, more consecratedly, and therefore times of difficulty are usually a greater blessing because of that. They shouldn't. They mustn't be so. But the human is built that way, that it strives for the spiritual more when it is under the stress of circumstances. Amid conjugal infelicity, it is well to hope, pray, and wait patiently on divine wisdom to point out the way. Later on she says, it is better to await the logic of events than for a wife precipitately to leave her husband, or for a husband to leave his wife. See? Soul tells us that if we build properly on mind and spirit, then soul says, stick to it. Stick to your proposition of mind and spirit. That's your soul standpoint. That you stick to it, and stick to it, and stick to it. Because soul, not we, has in itself the power of translation, the power of blessing every situation. And the purer and the more constant we stick to mind and spirit, the quicker and the clearer soul will bring the reformation and the translation and the exchange from sorrow into joy. Sorrow has its reward. We seldom remember that in times of sorrow. It has its reward. It never leaves us where it found us. You see, soul always resurrects us. It's only our ignorance about love as soul which thinks that sorrow brings us backward. The furnace separates the gold from the dross, that the precious metal may be graven with the image of God. You see how that wonderful law of mind, spirit, soul is brought out here. That through this fermentation of spirit, we get the separation where the scum is gone and where there is a purification. And the more this is separate, as this separation takes place, the more the true identity of our mission, of our life, of our being, of our manhood is being named by God. Is what he says is graven. When it is graven, it gets its identity by God, not by us. This whole last stone is a wonderful trust in the spiritual, because only there we find the true solution. And then comes that last paragraph of the mariner and that simile, that even, she says that even the dauntless seaman is not sure of his safety, though he has nautical science to help him. Because nautical science is not equal to the science of mind, she thought. He is not quite certain. He's rather certain, but not quite. And she says, but the law of the science of being, the science of mind, is absolutely reliable. You get that security of soul, you see. That security of soul. What is that security of soul? That security of soul always bases itself on mind and spirit. See? But if we do that like the mariner and work on and are persistent and work on and await and work on the right basis of mind and spirit, then we can rely that the solution will be secure and a blessing. Hoping and working, one should stick to the wreck. The human mind is apt to make a precipitate decision, to make a decision precipitately, and therefore interferes with God's government. Because the human mind is not equal to the science of mind and cannot figure out the best solution. The very best solution, which, as we have seen yesterday, leads us on to the ultimate. And so, hoping and working, one should stick to the wreck until an irresistible propulsion brings the decision. And that decision is always from God, and because it's from God, then it's always a blessing, whatever it may look like humanly. That's what she wants to say at the beginning of this soul, of this lover's soul paragraph, that we shouldn't be irritated by how a situation looks outwardly, humanly. It can look like an ugly toad, but it has a precious jewel in his head. And so she translates sorrow into joy. She translates great tribulation into the opportunity to entering the kingdom of heaven. She translates trial into something that is salutary. It's a great translation that goes on here in this rule of soul. Well, do we have another minute there? Yeah. Well, that gives me just a chance to point out Mrs. Eddy's poem, The Mother's Evening Prayer, which I think comes in here at this point in a wonderful way to show what love of soul shows, how love is always mothering by giving peace and rest and refuge and protection and presence, that love's purpose is always to draw men to her bosom, to the rest, and that she does it through the translation of soul, love of soul, through that translation of soul, where soul blesses for every insecurity, for every snare, for every fall, for every pit, for every tear, for every ingratitude, for every disdain and troubled heart, that she has always a blessing for it. So let's see the tone of love of soul when I try to read this poem as well as I can. She says, she begins with that, says, O gentle presence, peace and joy and power. O life divine that owns each waiting hour. Thou love that guards the nestling's faltering flight. Keep thou, my child, on upward wing tonight. Love is our refuge. Only with mine eye can I behold the snare, the pit, the fall. His habitation is high, is here and nigh. His arm encircles me and mine and all. Oh, make me glad for every scalding tear, for hope deferred, ingratitude, disdain. Wait and love more for every hate, and fear no ill, since God is good, and loss is gain. Beneath the shadow of his mighty wing, in that sweet secret of the narrow way, seeking and finding with the angels sing, lo, I am with you. Watch and pray. No snare, no fowler, pestilence or pain. No night drops down upon the troubled breast. When heaven's after smile earth tears drops gain, and mother finds her home and heavenly rest. See how she picks in these words the tone of lover's soul in marriage. She says, well, love is here, is a present, and that love always mothers and encircles me and mine and all. But with mine eye, I think I can see only pits and falls and snares. She says that's only with your eyes, because soul always can translate that. Says, how can you do it? Just watch and pray. Well, that makes just the end of it.